Welcome back. It's time for another episode of Confident ROI, the one show that gives you confidence. You're going to get a real return on your investment for what you're spending with us this morning. Whether you're working in your business, on your business, or with a business, from the man who's done all three, Alex Verovia. Hey, Alex.
Hey, Paul.
Where are you at? You're up in the Northern Command here today? You on the Canadian border, or are you somewhere exotic?
I'm in the Treasure Valley of Idaho. We have a bountiful supply of water and limited traffic. How are you this morning?
We have too much traffic this morning and short of water, so I may have to move up there.
We live in the area where they have the worst traffic in Idaho, and it's nowhere near the traffic of Orange County.
Oh, it's just unpredictable here. I mean, obviously, we started a few minutes late this morning because I just cannot seem to figure out the pattern here. One day I got it figured out, I get here 20 minutes early, the next minute I get here 20 minutes late, so I never know.
Well, the good news is I had someone help me learn about the Treasure Valley in Idaho, and he can help you or anyone who's considering moving to Idaho and just wants to know. It's funny, I'm down Orange County in LA all the time, and people go, you know, I've been thinking about going to Idaho. Well, John Vander Giesen over at Lisi Bishop, he's happy to give California refugees a tour of what is possible up here.
You got another guest on this morning here, and he's right down the street, but he didn't want to try and beat the traffic here. We're calling in today.
What I found in Southern California is, like, people live on these little islands, and they don't want to go off of them.
That's it.
And if you do, you got to get back before 2 o'clock, because then the traffic's just insane if you're coming from L.A. or you're going to stay till 8 o'clock at night to come back. So
I know your show's all about systems and putting systems in place to help people. We need a better system to move people around. That's all I can tell you, because right now too many of us work on T-to-T time, as my dad used to call it, 10 to 2. You can't get in before 10, and you got to get out before 2.
Exactly. But, you know, what would solve it is actually just a little bit of supply and demand. If you start charging, if the roads were privatized and you charge at the peak times, people would start rationalizing. If you had to pay people more to come in at 8 o'clock in the morning, then companies are incentivized to stagger their start schedules.
I tell you, it's just so easy and so hard to implement here. Well, teach us. Teach us, a great guru.
Well, one of the things I saw before we go to our guest is we have the World Cup going on. I'm not much of a footballer, but
true football, where you really have to kick the ball with your foot.
Yeah, true football, but I find sports to be interesting organization and team laboratories, and it's been really interesting looking at the semifinalists. There's been some interesting articles coming across and how they got to where they were. And I wanted to share those before we got started.
Okay.
In Belgium,
apparently
they've had a huge turnaround in the last 20 years, and it was so bad that they had this meeting, and there was a lot of hand-wringing, and they're the home of the EU, so there's a lot of debating and consternation just naturally there.
Right.
And they're like, you know, we're really good at developing classical violinists. Why can't we develop football or soccer players? And so they analyzed thousands of hours of film. And looked for the details of what they could do to improve. And they found a leader who said, look, you want to do this, you need a vision and you need a plan. And they implemented it, and they went from a non-World Cup team to the semifinalists. So, and they used their strengths as an analytical group. England, which traditionally had bombed out, was never as good as the English people thought they were.
Right.
They did something as well, and they decided to look at developing a better organization throughout their youth soccer leagues. And they realized that kids were getting taught different things throughout their progression.
Different styles of play, different ways, different things to focus on, right,
Each coach each year had a kind of different way. And so they implemented a system where, okay, they're gonna learn the same things, they're gonna be on the same program, so they can develop some continuity and improve their skills. They also did some things on they were at the lead on this tactical evolution where used to be you wanted to hold the ball for as long as possible.
Mm-hmm. What they call long ball, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And in basketball was similar, and they're saying that soccer is taking from basketball and being more attacking. So they taught the kids how to play more in 4-on-4 settings and really learn how to attack and then move on. Because Germany was really good at the long ball, but now they're out. And so the tactics are evolving. So England used their organizational and their tactical mindset. It got more interesting when we got to Croatia.
Yeah,
we got to the final.
Where did Croatia come from? I had to go pull out a map and see where Croatia is. I mean, come on.
Well, they've only been in World Cup soccer for 20 years because they were Yugoslavia before and didn't have their own team. But the crux of how they got good is they don't know. they're all about improvisation. And apparently just the countries, you don't know what's going to happen. And you just have to be able to improvise. And it's the same in their soccer development. They don't have a lot of structure like the English and the Belgians. But their players get really used to improvising. Hmm. In fact, they were talking about the penalty goals. And there's so much thought about it. And if you got to go first, so that because 60% of the time the team that goes first wins. In Croatia, they were in a penalty shootout, and they're kind of looking around like, what do we do? I don't know. We want to go first? We want to go second? They decided to go second. It was kind of just, let's try this.
Yeah, right.
And so complete opposite of the English, but both of them are using the strengths. The real interesting part when we got to France, and they call them Les Bleus, in that because they wear blue, the French, and that's where it got tough. Like, okay, why are they good? And they've been consistently good, and they won, I think, 20 years back.
Long time. Long time. They haven't been there a long time, yeah.
It's not that long. I can remember 20 years
ago. That's a long time, Alex.
I mean, we had color TV. We had AM radio. We even had the internet back then.
Oh, my goodness.
But they you know, the French are going to do things their own way. And back when they won, their tradition was kissing one of the bald player's head.
That sounds scientific. Yeah.
So this year, what they're doing is they're rubbing the mustache of one of their reserve midfielders who hasn't been playing.
Mm-hmm.
But what it makes even more interesting is that this 32-year-old midfielder, his girlfriend in the stands is Pamela Anderson.
What? Wow.
Yeah. I mean, so Belgium, you kind of can see how their tactics will work, you know, their plan and strategy would work. And England being the English.
Scientific organization, all that makes sense.
Yeah, and Croatia just playing your strength. You don't know what's going to happen. Just figure it out. Go with it. But the French, you know, the French have their own way. But actually, what they've done is they've evolved their tactics as well from the long ball and the ball control to the more attacking style. So they've evolved where a lot of the soccer powers haven't, and they're not relying. None of these ones had the one name superstars on their team. So it's kind of interesting just from this laboratory, because these teams come together once and they go away. So, how do they make it work? And four countries have four very distinct ways. I don't know if I would want to rub a man's mustache.
Well, I have a mustache. I'll try rubbing it here, see if it helps
us
today.
I have never rubbed it, never thought of rubbing it. But that was kind of interesting.
The only takeaway I got, and then we'll go to your guest here, is I found it fascinating. For the first time in my life, we don't have somebody representing the big powers. Soccer, to me, seemed to be dominated by a handful of countries. I've forgotten how many countries get to compete, but there's always, historically, Brazil and Pele, or the Germans, or the Italians. There was a Spanish. There were a handful of countries that seemed to be rotating the title. And now we've got some countries like Belgium, Croatia, France hasn't been there in a long time. It seems to be a total upheaval in the sport right now. And I think that kind of mirrors what's going on in the world and in business, everything. No, the old are not necessarily dominating. The old standards are not necessarily dominating like they once did.
Well, it's competition. What worked yesterday doesn't work today.
Yeah.
And people that don't get the results they want, they can either accept them or they can do something about them.
Right.
And something can be done. And you can't just assume just because it worked in the past, it's going to work in the future, which brings us right to our guest.
There you go.
He's got 25 years of experience in marketing and branding and strategic planning, and he's worked with some amazing brands. Similar types of situations we were just talking about, and how to compete in the global marketplace. Brands like Kendall Jackson, La Creme, Kettle One Vodka, Seagram's Vodka. Are you noticing any trends, Paul?
Let's see. It kind of looks like my office here. There's a bunch of alcohol in it there.
Well, but no whiskey.
but I'll tell you what, those are also premium. I mean, Kendall Jackson, you can't get anything. I think they've got to be the biggest, certainly in restaurants. I used to own a restaurant. And Kendall Jackson was the premier wine that everybody wanted to carry. And certainly Kettle One Vodka is one of the top two or three vodkas that everybody premium upsells that everybody orders. So, yeah.
I mean, I would say Kendall Jackson's like the Tumi of Chardonnay.
Yeah.
You just know what you're going to get.
Yeah. Right.
Simple Green, which is out of Orange County.
Yeah.
Cold Stone Creamery.
Oh, wow.
Vistage, Purina, a little company called ExxonMobil.
I think I heard of that one, yeah.
Western Digital, which is based in Orange County, and J.P. Morgan Chase. I wonder if he was behind all these blue lights that they have on in all of their branches all of the time. But our guest is Angelo Ponzi. Angelo, are you there?
I'm here. Thank you.
Well, welcome to Confident ROI. And why don't you tell the audience a little more about yourself and what you've done in the past, and then we'll talk about some stories and how you've helped companies position their brands.
Sure, thank you. Some background is I've had the unique opportunity to work both on the advertising agency or marketing agency side. I've worked from some small regional companies. I also worked for a multinational on a global basis. It's kind of where I cut my teeth. I had the opportunity to grow my own marketing firm and actually sell it. And so I had that experience of going through business growth myself over a 13-year period. I've also been client side, so a director of sales and marketing, VP of marketing, chief marketing officer, and chief strategy officer for some organizations. And then looking at that, where, you know, agency side, client side, business owner, I think gives me a unique differentiator for people that hire me, because I potentially have sat in their same roles and have had to deal with people, had to deal with finances, had to deal with strategies for growing, creating new products. So I think that makes me a little unique in the role that I currently have, and that role is as a fractional chief marketing officer. So basically I go into organizations on a fractional or part-time basis, contract basis, and work with them, sitting in the C-suite, helping from a strategic standpoint, and looking at business growth and those kinds of things. But I also, you know, work with on the tactical side as well to make sure that the programs that are being implemented are on target and delivering what the expectations are.
Well, that's Angelo, why don't we, could you share a story about positioning a company or a brand that was maybe facing a challenge and how you helped them be successful at that?
Sure. You know, like I said, I've worked on brands that had no money and startups to big brands. But I'm actually, if this is okay with you, I'm going to actually continue the conversation on Kendall Jackson, which is an actually very interesting story. So as
Paul, you have Paul's attention.
Yeah, you know, Kendall Jackson was the premium brand. I mean, you wanted to take that to parties and you got credit for bringing that brand. Well, what happened over the years, it became so popular. 90% of people who drank Chardonnay drank that wine. And so when Jess Jackson, when he was still alive, came to our agency and said, look, I've got a problem. And we're looking at him saying, you own 90% of the market, and so why is that a problem? Well, the problem was it started showing up everywhere. You could go to a chili cook-off, and there'd be Kendall Jackson. You could go to a taco place, and there'd be Kendall Jackson. So the luxury aspect or the premium aspect of the brand got hurt. It lost that cachet, and so it started becoming just an everyday wine. The price points dropped. I think at one point in time you might spend $16, $17, $18 on it. Now you could find it for $5.99 in the local grocery store. It was his legacy brand, and so our job was to reposition it as a premium brand and to do that for his legacy, because he was 75 years old at the time when we started working with him on this. And one of the things that we did is to try to understand the brand. And so we did a series of focus groups and conducted some quantitative surveys around the country trying to understand how people view the brand. And what we ended up with were 26 different attributes. 13 of them defined the brand as a premium, and 13 defined the brand as just, you know, an everyday wine, you know, that you just might buy, but you wouldn't bring to a party kind of thing. And so we, taking that information, everything we did from a communication standpoint focused on getting those attributes that were positive to rise and get the negative ones to decrease. For example, one of the ones that we looked at is, you know, is Kendall Jackson owned by a large conglomerate? And the answer was yes. We asked them if it was owned by a family. The answer was no. But that was the opposite. It was a family-owned business. I mean, Jess Jackson, he would ride around in the fields and really hands-on. But the marketplace didn't know that. Why? Because it was everywhere. So that was a really interesting and great assignment, and looking at how do we do that. So one of the things is we needed to personalize it. So our first campaign actually featured Jess Jackson. So we wanted people to get to know who this man is. If you may or may not remember, at one point in time, all of a sudden, his signature appeared on the bottles of wine of Kendall Jackson. That was, you know, again, to reinforce that there is a real man behind this. And so from there, we moved on to the family and then moved on to the legacy of all the different brands, and that he was a farmer, not a winemaker. And that was the other interesting part. He really saw himself as a farmer, as opposed to a winemaker. But during that process, we learned things about the wall of wine. You go into a grocery store, and you know there's a 12-foot aisle or whatever long it is, and there's, you know, 100 brands sitting there. The question people always had is, what do I bring? What's the right one? And used to be, if I wanted to impress somebody, I'd bring Kendall Jackson. And then it got to the point where, well, we're not really going to bring that because, you know, it's just too common. And so our goal was to reestablish that cachet.
And what worked and helped doing that?
Well, it really was it was the marketing and the communications and the rollout. So we had a lot of different campaigns, heavy print and publications that reestablished it. You know, Modern Luxury magazines, C-suite magazines. So really trying to stay out of the local papers and things like that made it seem more common than not. So all the communications at store level, the Neckers, all really talked about the wine and how it was made and the terroir and all this kinds of things that tried to reestablish and position it as a brand that was created with a lot of care and, you know, by the family.
And were you able to move the needle on family-owned and business?
Yes, we did, and we saw the price points rise. One of the things we also do, and part of my background is market research, is we ran tracking studies. So every quarter we were in the field trying to understand, you know, was the needle moving? And an interesting thing, at one point in time, the budgets were scaled back, and we noticed over the next 6 months that the attributes were slipping. So we looked for a point that said your spending level needs to be X in order to maintain and grow what we were doing. So we were able to really get involved in that. And then we worked with our internal people when we started doing volumetrics and projections on wine consumption and things like that, that would help substantiate that the campaign was moving, because we were seeing the needle move from the volume standpoint, not only in in reputation, but, you know, at store level and you know, at the cash register as well.
All right. Well, I'm going to open up, since we're talking about Chardonnay, I can have some breakfast Chardonnay, and we'll take a little break here and come back. We'll talk about brands and companies maybe that don't have the budget that Kendall Jackson did, what they can do, and maybe you can share some stories on what's possible when you're not selling as many cases as Kendall Jackson was.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we're just going to give you a chance to go to the fridge and open up your bottle of Kendall Jackson while we tell you that there is another way to hear stories and collect stories. After you've listened to the podcast, read the magazine, Confident ROI. In it, you'll discover the right tools to improve your company and more amazing stories like the ones we're sharing today from people like Vern Harnish on strategy or Brad Smart on top grading, a cure for your hiring headache. All sorts of interesting articles and ideas along with great stories to turn your organization or your efforts into something great as well. Confident ROI, just like it sounds, ConfidentROI.com. All right, now that we gave everybody a chance to go run to the fridge, we'll head back to Alex and his guest.
Thanks, Paul. Angelo, so why don't you walk us through the other side of the situation where a lot of times companies, they want to build their brand, they're a challenger, they're not the leader in the segment. How can they move the needle when they don't have seven-figure marketing budgets?
Right. Well, I I've worked with companies with varying budgets, and to me, it starts with, you know, who is your customer? We have to understand who the customer is. We have to understand their pain points, their needs and wants, and ultimately how they consume information. This digital world has changed the way marketers market. And so there's so many different channels of communications that we can do, from, you know, email to digital to website to print ads to TV. And so understanding that aspect. So that can be done very simply, for example, with, you know, your salespeople just getting information when they're sitting there talking to a customer. It can be done with some market research. And any time I use the word market research, people just say, oh, it's going to be too expensive. But it doesn't have to be. There's so many tools out there from a Survey Monkey, if you will, to other tools that allow you to do some, I call it grandmother research, in the sense of just trying to capture information. I worked with a company last year, which was a small, about a $4 million software company, and I was hired actually just to talk to their customers. And so I ended up talking to, I don't know, I think it was about 15 of their customers, to trying to gather some insights on how to help them communicate better. And so those situations where, if we look at just what is important from a strategic level and how do we get that from a cost efficiency standpoint. There's a book that it called Revenue Growth Habit by Alex Goldfein, F-A-Y-N, and it's about, you know, spending 15 minutes a day to increase your business. And in there, it's all tactics that can be done, frankly, for no money. And it's just a matter of putting some time into it, like gathering customer testimonials. A lot of businesses actually surprise me when I ask them about, you know, do you have any customer testimonials we can use in, you know, in our communications? And the answer is no. And so, you know, I always now tell my customers, you know, we have to get those kinds of things. Why? Because it's your customers talking about your product or service, as opposed to, you know, the brand talking about it all the time. And so that's a great book that gives a lot of great insights and actually even direction on how to go out and talk to customers about, you know, gathering testimonials and things like that.
And Angelo, there's all this talk and focus on customer testimonials. Why? Why are they so important?
Well, it really validates, because if I'm telling you I'm great, but if my customers are telling you that I've done a good job, or, you know, solving their issues and problems, it's coming from that third party, right? It's not me telling you, but it's them telling you. And there's a credibility aspect to that that is so important, because it validates, you know, what's going on from, you know, people in similar businesses. Now, I'm a business owner, but, you know, I'm a marketing guy and a consulting guy, versus if I have my manufacturing or my software or my education client talking about what I've done for them, it just adds that third party endorsement and recommendation, that and add that credibility that I think is so important for businesses. So the same kind of thing, you know, for small businesses, if they talk about, and their customers are talking about how wonderful their customer service, the software company I was talking about, one of the things we heard consistently is about their customer service. And, you know, if there was an issue, they're right there. And they were also, you know, reaching out and trying to make sure that they were trying to understand if the client is experiencing any new pain points and things like that. So they got a lot of kudos, if you will, for their customer service aspect. And so we wanted to make sure that was front and center, because we felt that was a point of differentiation, that if anybody's gone through developing software or developing things like that, you know, it's about constant communications, and as things happen and once the product launches, the fact that the people are there for them is real important. So
have you noticed when asking customers about, hey, tell me about this company, have you gotten any feedback that you know, that your client or the company is doing the work that wants to know is surprised about? Are they surprised about how their product's perceived or how they're perceived?
Yeah, and more often than not, there are those surprises, which, you know, sometimes they're positive surprises and sometimes they're not so positive surprises. I was doing some interviews for a client, and one of the consistent things I heard from their customers was, you're the first person we've heard from in 7 months. Well, that's not good, right? They, when it came to the product, they were really happy, but the customer service or the salespeople staying in communication with the customer when everything was going great, they just never heard from them. So that was something we took as a positive and a negative, and how do we, you know, spin that to make sure that the client changes the way they communicate. And I think that's important too, is a lot of times businesses tend to focus on their main contact, if you will. And so what happens is, and this happened to us in the advertising business all the time, that main contact leaves and you don't know anybody else in the business. So really this kind of multi-level sell and multi-level relationship building, I find, is extremely important. So if one person leaves, your business doesn't become in jeopardy. And we found that a lot in the agency business in the early days when we didn't know who the CEO was of the company, but just the marketing director. Marketing director leaves, a new guy comes in, brings in his agency, boom, we were out the door, even though we were doing great work. And so that's, I think, is an encouragement, and things that those kinds of interviews with customers reveal.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Well, marketing, to me, is kind of an enigma in terms of, you know, where do you start? What order do you go on? Do you start at the website? Do you start at how you're communicating with customers? What have you found, and maybe any stories where you help clients figure out and companies figure out, hey, we're doing all these things. Where should you start and focus your energy?
Right. You know, so many times when I start these conversations with a prospective client, it's like, well, we need a website. We need an email campaign. You know, we need to be doing, you know, social or digital marketing. And that's tactical. And I think the reason that happens is because there's this urgency. I've got to generate leads. I've got to generate more business. The problem that I have as kind of a strategic guy is, you know, what is the right message? What is the right communication channel? You know, each channel allows you to speak differently, right? If you have a website, you have the opportunity to tell a bigger story. But if you're posting on Facebook, you know, you have limitations on what you can say. So understanding the medium and the messaging. And so when I say to step back and look strategically, is understanding, again, back to that customer. What's of interest? How do I communicate? You know, who is that? Where are they in their kind of customer journey? If they're at the beginning of the journey, I'm going to talk to them a little bit differently than if they're towards the end of the journey and getting close to that decision. Then what kind of information do they like? We might find in some situations people like white papers that I like to read. They still like to read PDFs, if you will. But now we find that a lot of people want short videos. So Well, if you're not doing videos and your prospect likes videos, then you're already putting yourself at a disadvantage. So, again, strategically understanding all these different aspects before you really start, you know, hitting the tactical side of it so you can shape the right messages, making sure that, you know, there's personalization going on, and, again, utilizing the mediums to their fullest extent. And then
you're mentioning strategy. What are some of those big questions that a company needs to answer before they start getting to the tactical?
Sure. Well, one of the things that I do when I start to work with an organization, especially, you know, and when we're looking at brand, is trying to make sure that, first of all, that the leadership is in alignment of the brand and its purpose and its function. Too many times, you know, we start this process and we find, let's say, there's, you know, five leaders of the organization, and they're not in alignment on what the brand stands for or the way to communicate it or the value proposition, things like that. So it's from that stepping back and saying, what are we? Who do we want to be? And then once we have a clear understanding of what the brand is, and then moving forward with what's the important aspects of communications. And that could be based on the vertical market or the target audience.
Right.
You know, if your audience is in the medical field or if it's in the industrial, you know, the way I might talk to somebody in the medical business, if you will, is not going to be the same way I might talk to somebody in industrial. So understanding those vertical channels.
Yeah, understanding the vertical. Have you found that companies are surprised when people on the leadership team have different ideas about what the brand and the product, how it should be positioned and what it stands for?
Probably not as surprised as I am.
Have you seen this with recognized brands that even then they're not
small companies?
Clear?
I've seen it with big organizations. And because depending on the size of the organization, I mean, if you're a small entrepreneur and you're starting, I mean, you are the brand, right? Everything, you define it. But as you start to add people and you start to move up to 2 million, to 5 million, to 10 million, you know, you might not be as involved in that day-to-day communications. Therefore, now you've got, you know, your team is responsible for developing and defining and making sure that there's consistency. Another thing I see a lot of times is the consistency in the message. You know, if we worked at the same company and I'm out telling one story about the brand and you're out telling a slightly different story about the brand, you know, are we confusing the marketplace? Are we really, you know, giving the company its proper due, if you will, to make sure that when a consumer hears about us, there's consistency in about who we are, our values, our core principles, and whatever we're trying to sell or to, you know, to communicate from a service standpoint. And so looking at those aspects, that making sure that the team, one of the things I find is internal communications, right? We're all about external communication to the marketplace. A lot of companies don't spend time making sure that the people inside understand what's going on and what the brand is about. And if you have, a you know, 50 people working for you and they all go out on a Saturday afternoon and people start asking about what they do, and they can't speak to the brand proposition or the positioning of the brand, then you've just set 50 different stories out there. And it really surprises me how many companies don't spend the time to market internally as much as they spend marketing externally.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we got our last break here. Maybe on the backside, you can talk about an experience on how you're able to bring people get more on the same page when it comes to positioning a brand.
Okay, that sounds great. Thank you.
All right.
You know, if you're like most of us, you're probably trying to decide what business tool or concept to implement to advance your company. There's millions of them out there, but it can be very frustrating trying to find them and sort through them. So if you're like me, you'll be pleased to know there's now somebody you can ask. Ask Vorobyev. Alex Vorobyev. He was the first business advisor to focus on helping companies and leaders do just that, find their unique starting point and the right tool to take them where they wanted to go. Learn more, you can simply visit confidentroi.com and be confident that you now have a place. You can just scream out and yell, "Hey, Vorobyev." He'll even answer your questions. There's a special section right there on the website. You can just ask him, ask away. Or you want to go a little further, call his office at 949-478-0042. That's 949-478-0042. Hey, Vorobyev, what do we got next here?
Well, Angela's gonna help us go from playing like Croatia with our brand and just improvising and everyone having a different story, and how can you get the team on the same page when it comes to the story. And Angela, can you share a story with us?
Sure. I'll just talk kind of generically about a few brands, but one of the things I always suggest is a kind of a short survey, if you will, and it can be done by an internal marketing person or whatever it happens to be, but talking to each of the management separately with a set of questions that probe about their views about the brand, their long-term vision, looking at what they think the value propositions are, and taking that as kind of the basis to understand where are you at. Now, if everybody's in alignment, you start a little bit later, but if they're not, then you have to start there in understanding what is going on.
And Angelo, in value proposition, could you define that, what you mean there?
Yeah, so, I mean, ultimately, when you're talking to your customers, I mean, they want to understand, what value do you bring, right? It's about, what value do you bring as a service organization or your product offer them? I mean, there's so many different ways to look at that, but it isn't just about selling a product, right? Because once you have the product in place, what does that do? There's a technique called values laddering. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it really looks at, what are those rational or tangible aspects of a product or a service, and you kind of ladder up to that emotional side and that connection. So, from that standpoint, you might look at, so what's the value of bringing you on as a business? It could be, this widget solves a problem. But on the emotional side, to the person that's bringing you in, it might mean, hey, I saved the company a lot of money, or I've done such a great job, I'm going to get a promotion. Whatever those motivations are to make that. And it's a simple process to understand that lays a clear pattern on how to communicate and what's important from a value standpoint to the end customer. And I think those are just some of one of the tools that I like to use. And I think that can be used. The other, I have this available if someone would like it. It's a kind of an outline for a brief survey that people can use. It's fill in the blanks. And it's about checking, how healthy your brand is. And I think that's the other area we'd like to start in is, we might think we're doing great and people know who we are. And that's why we talk to customers to try to understand, do they understand who we are versus what we think we are? And so, checking on brand health is, where do we stand in the marketplace? If I ask customers to describe us to somebody else, and, are they describing it in the proper way? So I think from that strategic standpoint, it's really trying to get the foundation, understanding, who that customer is, or customers, right? If you're a software company, for example, and you're going to be evaluated, well, who started that? Who initiated the process? Is that the same person who evaluates the software? And is that the same person who pulls the trigger on purchase? A lot of cases, that could be three different people. Well, if you've got one message to three people, well, I'm not talking to the finance guy is very different than the way I'm talking to the guy that's going to evaluate me. So, there's all that work that needs to be done up front before you get into that tactical side, because then you know what your messaging is, how you want to communicate, you have an understanding of how they like to consume information, and again, you just become more efficient and effective in the work that you're doing. And especially in small businesses even for myself, I use email marketing and blogging, and I go to networking meetings. Well, I have to make choices too about where my return on and understanding who I'm trying to communicate with. So, those all work back to kind of budget do I have? And based on the budget, what is the most cost-efficient way to communicate? There's a lot of tools out there, but you can't necessarily do them all. I have a client
right now, you got a small, mid-sized business in today's ever-changing marketing and competitive landscape. what tools are generating high ROIs for clients and companies?
Sure. Especially from the B2B side, it's, you know, you can read lots of articles about, you know, emails dying and all that kind of stuff. It's not. As a matter of fact, it's probably one of the most cost-efficient and effective tools still. I think, you know, from a B2B standpoint, is email marketing, certainly the website. Website is the number one. A lot of statistics will show that anybody who's going to potentially purchase your product or service has already done 75% of their research before they pick up the phone and call
75%, huh?
Yeah, and a lot of studies will say it's 65, a lot of studies will say it's 80 something. But so the website is extremely important, but how you communicate on that website, I've gone to websites that are literally just giant brochures. Well, people don't read anymore, so you have to understand what are those 4, 5, 6 lines that really help communicate the your value prop, if you will, to get them to want to read more or to investigate more. But I find that, you know, on a consumer standpoint or even B2B, digital marketing is pretty strong, but retargeting, where, you know, you've probably gone online and you looked at a product or a service, the next thing you know, you're on a different website, and that product that you just looked at is popping up in an ad, kind of chasing you around the internet. You know, that's retargeting, and I think that's really good. You can get into geofencing and stuff like that, working with a client who only wants to target, frankly, Orange County. So all our digital work is geofenced to just be in certain areas in Orange County. So I think it really depends on whether you're a consumer or a product or a B2B. And again, understanding, for example, when we worked with Cold Stone Creamery, you know, we had campaigns for rainy days.
Because campaigns for rainy days, really?
Yeah. So when the rain would come, the campaign would trigger, and we would communicate via email, Twitter, you know, Facebook, about, you know, coming in and I don't remember the exact messaging, but basically trying to get them to come in and buy ice cream, giving them a reason to, as opposed to sitting in their house because it was raining outside.
And they got an ROI, a return on investment on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow.
And I think
things are changing. It's just like the soccer. Different types of tactics are working today.
Yeah, and the beauty of kind of today versus years ago, when you ran an ad, you might have to wait 60 days to get the ad placed, and then by the time you saw some results, you're 6 months into a campaign. Nowadays, you can turn that campaign on a dime. There's a service that I just introduced to a client where it's actually able to, it's more B2B, but they can reverse the IP so they know what company is visiting the site. Mm. And so now they get that information. They look in their database to see if it's a prospect that had visited before. There's also another one out there that we use called CallRail that is kind of rotating numbers on your website or in your email campaigns and things like that. So you can track what campaign the call came from. They record all of the phone interviews. So you can go back and you can listen so you can judge, you know, the person who's answering your phone.
And what was the name of that one again?
It's called CallRail, CallRail. It's a great service. I have 3 or 4 clients on it right now. It's just an easy way to monitor and track how effective your campaigns are doing.
That's really insightful. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah,
how about, we're getting close to wrapping up here, but anything that you've been doing in marketing for 25 years, anything you wish you knew about earlier or had read earlier that would have been, you wish you would have had it earlier in your career?
Oh boy, that's a good question. Probably earlier in my career, you know, probably like a lot of the kids today, you know, you thought you knew everything and nobody could tell you anything. But probably the advice I would give anybody today is don't be afraid to go back to school. I mean, that's one of the things that I started at one point in time. I was trying to move up. And the CEO of the company said, well, you don't have any real accounting background, so how can I let you be you know, the number two guy if you can't, you know, understand the finances. And that was the challenge. So I went back to school and took a couple years worth of accounting classes so I could understand the finance side. You know, social media came along and everybody's trying to figure that out. I went back to school and took a certificate program to become more of a social media strategist. I'm not interested in, you know, the daily posting. I have people to do that, but from a strategic standpoint. So I always think there's things are changing so much. There's so much information that because it's available today that wasn't, you know, 20 years ago, that people need to carve out a little bit of time and learn something new every week that could have an impact on their business.
Sure. Well, that's all been great information you've shared with us. And one of the things that Paul would like me to share and talk about is apparently the boys at the network, you already know this, but the OC Talk Radio Network have given you a show. You're going to have your own show on the network starting in September, the Business Growth Cafe. Can you tell the audience what it's going to be about?
Sure. Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. So one of the things that I've experienced, and while my background is marketing, having the unique opportunity, I've been involved in a lot of different aspects of a business, right? So I get involved. I've been involved in the finance side and the HR and talent acquisition side. Why? Because, you know, I always look at if I'm wildly successful in the sales and marketing efforts, it has an impact in every piece of the business. And if I'm not as successful, it also has a major impact of the business. So I picked that kind of direction of business growth because I think it's important that, you know, companies and people who I hope will listen understand all those different things that can have an impact on their growth and trying to give them insights on things that they can change or do that, you know, might change that trajectory. And that's, and it, I think, is the direction that I want to take the Business Growth Cafe as a talk show.
Nice, nice. So you're starting in September, and how long will the show be?
Show's going to be a 30-minute show to start, and I will have a guest like I am here today with you. And, you know, really, it's going to be at 12:30 on Tuesdays, and, you know, part of the cafe part is, you know, sitting down, if you will, having a cup of coffee, sharing a lunch, and having a conversation. So I'm really excited about that and looking forward to it, but I wanted to wait a few months so I could get, you know, all my ducks in a row, get my marketing all together.
Well, it's not as hard as one might think. Paul makes it really easy. And so welcome to the octalkradio.net. It is a big corporate podcasting at its finest. And anything else before wrapping up, and how can people get a hold of you?
Sure. Probably the easiest way is to go to my website, which is, you know, www.theponzigroup.com. And on there, I do have a couple ebooks. One is on establishing a competitive intelligence program. That's the other thing I see that's pretty inconsistent. And one of the reasons why I developed this is that companies don't spend as much time on understanding the competition as I think they should. And so I put a book together that people can see, and it gives them directions on how to set it up and how to utilize it and what to do with it. The other one is on storytelling. Also on the website, an ebook, and it really just simple that it's this idea that the premise of your story is also the message. And I use this concept about a clothesline. So, you know, hanging all the elements on the clothesline, we know from the beginning to the end what's going to happen. Nothing's hidden. You know, you can see it putting too many pins, if you will, on the clothesline could potentially clutter your story. So I think it's a good. It's a good storytelling. I tell some of my own stories in there and about storytelling. So I offer that. Those are free. And also, I do offer a free consultation to organizations if they just want to chat in a non-sales environment. And there's a way to book it there on the website. Because I think part of it is about communication. It's an understanding. And, And I have found that to be an effective approach, because a lot of people have questions and sometimes they get hesitant about, you know, wanting to talk because they think they're going to get charged. And so I like to have these non-sales environments and just kind of, I call it, you know, giving back. It's like when I work with kids and stuff like that, it, you know, it's giving back to, you know, all the people that have helped me along my way.
Well, thanks, Angelo. That's you're sharing a lot of nice things with the audience there, from the ebooks to the consultation. Appreciate you coming on. Look forward to hearing the new show in late summer, early fall. And thanks for coming on.
All right. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Have a good day.
Thanks, you too.
Okay, I just want to give you a chance to plug again, Confident ROI, and if there's anything you want to mention about the books, that the book list you guys have put together.
Yeah, we've put together a book list called the Advance Your Company Book List, which takes books and puts them into the order and framework that's talked about in Transform Your Company, because there's so many ideas out there. It's almost like looking up at the night sky with all the different concepts and ideas to improve your business. But what's the right order? In which way should you go? The Advance Your Company book list takes the structure and the ability to break up every business tool out there into five buckets. And what's the logical order for progressing? So we already have posted on the core element of the foundation for building a business, and talking about tribal leadership, the book, and as well as for survival and the strategy level, Inside Advantage. It ties a lot to what our guest was talking about today, and defining your core customer and what your unique product offering is, and how you're going to get people to buy your product over the competition. So check that out. These will also be in the upcoming, in a different format, will be in the upcoming Confident ROI, the next edition of the magazine. But if you go to confidentroi.com, you can check out the magazine and any of its formats, print, digital, as well as audio, and listen to the podcast. If you go to LinkedIn, it's really easy to connect with me. And if you have any questions or want to have a chance to talk about anything, just send me a message there, and we can connect that way.
Okay, well, you know, I never thought there was another method for reading business books other than starting with A and going through to Z. You're saying there might be another, a more intelligent sequence than that.
Well, not so much reading the book, but which order to read the books in.
Mm.
Because you got 10 books on your desk. Which one do you start with? And we tend to start with books that deal with the outside of the company. And what our guest was talking about today was the need to answer important questions before you start putting up a website, before you start doing email.
Exactly.
And so answering those important questions, and that's where a lot of great business books are coming out right now, about really answering those important questions, like why does the company exist? What's the culture of the company? Who are their core customers? Answering those make doing that frontline work a lot easier, because it's a lot clearer what you're trying to do for whom.
So the only question I have to ask again is, where do I get this book list, how do I download it here? How do I read it?
If you go to alexvorobiev.com, in the blog section, you'll see the Advance Your Company book list.
Well, not that anybody needs prompting, because they've all figured it out by now, but how do you spell Vorobiev?
Just like it sounds. It's AlexVorob, as in boy, IEFF, as in Frank.com, and it'll be in the show notes page.
All right. Well, we'll look it up, and we'll look for more next week when we come back to Confident ROI. Thanks, Alex.
Thanks, Paul.
You've been listening to another episode of Confident ROI, the one show you can confidently listen to and know that you're going to get something real interesting, real, real worthwhile out of each and every week. Right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OCTalkRadio.net.